I went right into my biggest fears and pursued it and did it. I don't really know anybody that's been in the industry as long as I have been in the male arena. When it came down to it, especially working on both sides of the border, those things came a lot of really pivotal moments, some really incredible experiences, some horrible experiences, but that's life.
Welcome to the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast with leading DIY lifestyle blogger, Anna Fulmer, where women are inspired with authentic stories and practical strategies to reclaim their hearts and homes by empowering transformation, one imperfect day at a time.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast. I am your host, Anna Fulmer. Today, it is my privilege to introduce to you Corey Hilton. Corey is a well-respected author and introspective influencer on the subject of self-worth. In his book, Take It Off, Corey reveals his 10 strongest personal values and the emotional feelings attached to them in a 25-year-long career that most cannot comprehend. Passionate about helping others learn to overcome their self-doubt and emotional blocks, welcome speaker and author Corey Hilton. Well, Corey, welcome to the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast. It's so fun to have you here. I love having you onto the podcast. We're going to share about your book. We're going to share about your story. But let's just start out by, first of all, we can all laugh at my attempt at printing out your book. So this is his book, Take It Off, Revelations of a Male Exotic Dancer. And the problem is we couldn't really like time it up so that I could get an actual copy of his book. So he was great. And there it is. There it is.
That's the one. One of two that's actually printed at this particular moment. The rest of them are actually coming out of this week. So
right. So he was gracious enough to send me a digital copy. So if anyone's wondering why that book looks so weird, it's just like a printed piece of paper. But I wanted you to be able to see the book. It makes me laugh because when I say the title of your book, I could like hear the eyebrows raising. I don't know about you, but I can like already hear the, wait, what was that?
Yeah.
You mentioned early on in your book the fact that you became, at an early age, addicted to experiencing emotion.
Absolutely.
And I'm literally reading what you wrote because I think it was so well put. You said, at an early age, I became addicted to experiencing emotion, something that I was rarely able to express and that was rarely expressed to me. And I thought that was an incredibly insightful way to sort of begin your book. Tell me more about your family dynamics growing up and how they contributed to this sort of revelation in your life.
Yeah, thanks for that question, because I really want to clarify something right off the hop. It's not that I didn't have literal, it was just expressed to me in a different way. And what I mean by that is I was raised by a depression era family. Okay. So I was one of these unique people back in the 70s era that basically had been adopted to his grandparents. So my grandparents were amazingly great people and they actually did express emotion, but it wasn't in the way that typical families express emotion. So I didn't see, or I should say, see a lot of physical contact between my parents. I didn't see a lot of, or hear a lot of I love yous or sweeties or honeys. There was none of that stuff in my house. Like there was zero of that. But there was another expression that was more so monetary at times. It's not that I'm here to cry a sob story about my family. In fact, it's quite the opposite. My family gave me more than most families will give a kid. I was actually spoiled at times, especially when I was younger. But what it came down to was, is although you could have all, it's just like anything, you could have all the money in the world, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're a happy person. So I don't pass blame off on my family and say, oh, you're the reason why I carried all this subconscious blocks and emotion.
Yeah.
But what it came down to is when you put your family on a pedestal like that and you pretend that your father is Superman and your mother, every word that comes out of her mouth is the truth.
Yeah.
Then when those words hit you, you take them for real. When you don't get those emotional expressions given to you, you're hungry for it. You're starving for something. So for me, I didn't really necessarily rely on my family to do that. I actually took it on myself and went, okay, I'm going to actually make people have, I'm going to get emotions out of people. So as funny and cute as this sounds, this was the beginning of my journey in a weird way at a very young age. So even when I was only 5 or 6 years old, my family would have company over very rarely, but when they would, they would be sitting in the kitchen, they'd be sitting around playing cribbage, talking about the weather, whatever it might be. But I would be the kid that would be in his bedroom, and there was an entryway between my bedroom and the kitchen, between the bedroom and the bathroom, where you could see me. And I would run back and forth between the bathroom and the bedroom, stark naked, like naked as a jaybird, running back and forth, because it was just like, oh, make them all laugh. And it was great to actually make them laugh. And
what's terrifying is you just described my 4-year-old daughter. So.
Oh, get ready.
Yeah, get ready is right. Lord Jesus, come quickly.
But realistically, it's funny because when I dove back in through some really crazy introspection over this last couple of years, that's why I call myself an introspective influencer, because I really do want to influence people without any shame or without any negativity, really. Like, I'm not looking back at my family and saying, oh, I wish I had a different family, or I wish that it was, it's not like that. It's just that with love, I'm still able to go back and say, okay, because of this, this is maybe why I made some of these moves in my life. Right? And that's just being authentic. That's all.
Absolutely. And I think that sense of authenticity is what I did appreciate about your book. It certainly was not a PG read. And if I'm being honest, it was uncomfortable for a lot of it, but it's also real life. And it is the message that you share is the bottom line. And to me, that is shared by so many of us. And so in my mind, you don't negate somebody's story simply because it's uncomfortable, when the fact is that at the heart of it, our struggles are the same. And the message that we come to is frankly very, very similar. So I think it's important to embrace all of our messy stories, because we all have them. Some might be a little less rated R than others, but the fact is we're all a mess. The quicker we embrace that, and the quicker that we can authentically recognize that, I mean, it's literally the message of this podcast is embrace your imperfection to empower transformation. Real talk. Like, let's go.
Yeah. And, you know, like, that's something that unfortunately and fortunately, like, I don't look at my past and go, oh, when those pains happened or when those things, I'm grateful for those pains. I'm grateful for those failures. Like, I'm grateful that I was stripped down naked in a different way, not just from my career, but I was stripped down naked at one point where I lost everything.
Right.
And I'm talking like to the point where the only shelter that I had was my aunt's basement that I was living in at 38 years old and having to restart my life all over again with a bag in my hand, right? And I know we've heard the story about hitting rock bottom and then coming out of it. A lot of people have hit that rock bottom before, right? Yeah. But like for me, I figured out in a lot of ways that the reason why I hit rock bottom in some ways was my own perfectionist tendencies. And I was literally, in a weird kind of way, it was kind of like I dropped right into that from an early age. Like, in fact, it was like when I went into bodybuilding, for example, like that was my way to find acceptance. So discipline found me acceptance. And I still utilize that discipline to this day in such a more productive way. That's actually progression instead of just perfection, right?
Well, so let's talk about that a little bit. So you ended up as a, I think I'm remembering this right, as a bouncer at a nightclub at the age of 17. And that experience there in that nightclub, due to different connections, led you into bodybuilding, which is what you just alluded to. Tell me a little bit about that time in your life and how that sort of transformed you and kind of progressed you to the next stage in life.
Yeah, thanks for asking that, because it's important to me, like, just to express that for me, my motivation, unfortunately, at that time wasn't necessarily for Corey. It was for outside entities. So as a kid, like so many of us do, we have this love at first sight moment when we see that one person that's just like, ooh. And so for me, it was, I looked at her up on her pedestal and thought, oh, you know, one day I might have a chance, but I wouldn't, being the person that I am, you know, on my exterior, there's no way I would. So I thought the only thing that I can actually truly control, as hard as it may be, is I can make a metamorphosis in my own body if I train as hard as I can, if I get in the gym, if I work out, which I did with a friend of mine in his carport for a while, and then I ended up in the gym. But what happened with that was I started surrounding myself with different people in a new environment. And as we all know, when you're not growing in an environment, you move the plant from the one environment to the new environment, give it some water, and away you go. Obviously, the plant starts to grow. We've heard that a bazillion times. That's literally what I did. And so when I surrounded myself with a new group of people, I started to transform. It was like that cocoon. It was like I came out of the cocoon and all of a sudden I started forming into the butterfly sort of thing. And that's what I referred to in that first chapter. But what it came down to was, is I found that through that discipline, that freak to be a freak discipline, that discipline that only 1% of the entire planet does, by going through the entire process of bulking training for competing, and then basically getting to the point of going through 10 weeks of raw, hardcore dieting to beyond comprehension dieting, where it's really kind of, you're really at that level where it's almost hard to believe you're even there.
Like,
it's just that intense. And so by doing that, though, and stretching that rubber band of discipline out so hard, that was almost like the launch pad for everything else that happened. So I built that exterior up. And then all of a sudden, I got introduced to the scene at 17 years old that most people don't see. And obviously, I'm up here in Canada. So the drinking age in Canada here is 19. Me being a 17-year-old, I didn't look like the average 17-year-old. So when my buddy said to me, hey, throw on a university shirt and I bounce at this club, why don't you come out? And so I did. Now, I didn't start off as a bouncer there. In fact, I started off as a topless waiter on ladies' night on Tuesdays and Thursdays. But how that happened was, my friend Wade, he invited me out, and I go to this club, and I, of course, show up at 7 o'clock at night when the club's first opening, all nervous and freaked out. And he says to me, oh, you know, nice shirt. I walk in with his university shirt on, and the only other person in the whole place is the manager. And he comes walking up and introduces himself. And next thing you know, he starts asking me questions. You go into school and whatever. And I was like, yeah. And do you need some extra income? I'm like, of course. And then he says, oh, take off your shirt. Nobody's around. So I took off my shirt. And then he turns around, you're hired. And I didn't even know what I was hired for. Right. And so he says, be here on Tuesdays and Thursdays. You're going to serve drinks, 15% of everything you sell as far as the booze. And from there, it's like, you just basically take the rest of your tips. So all of a sudden, it was like, I get plunged into this whole new world. And my parents, those old school parents, were so supportive that they actually were, yeah, go ahead. It's okay. As long as you don't get all messed up on drugs, you keep your grades up, go for it, son. Enjoy. Like, just go rip it up. I was just like, for that mentality of a generation far gone, like, it was just so incredible for them to actually accept that and go with that. And so with that being said, it was just one of those things where when I went into that scene, my whole world changed. And that's happened a few times to me. And by going into that new environment, it was almost like, when I walked into that, all I can say is that I had a different type of acceptance, and it was not a normalization of what everybody else in my school or my family or anything else, they didn't normalize me. And that was when I truly realized that strangers are not going to normalize me. It's going to be the people that I've always associated with before. Maybe they see me as that little kid running back and forth between the bathroom to the bedroom, right? So when I saw that, I was like, okay, this is going to make a massive difference in my life. And so I went that direction. And then all of a sudden, I ended up having people coming to me and saying, Corey, you don't need to just be this. You can go into the full new dancing thing. And so I ended up transforming from being this male waiter into a bouncer as well. And I was literally sitting there on it, letting people in the club, IDing people, with police officers standing right next to me, having a conversation about what was going on around the area that night. And I'm underage. I'm underage sitting there and associating with everything from pimps and hookers and everything else, trying to get inside this crazy nightclub that was the number one ladies' night in all of British Columbia at the time. It was like mayhem at that time. We're talking 80s. I mean, there's just lineups of people down the street. And it's this foregone era that you just don't see anymore, that's so politically incorrect, it's almost ridiculous. And so there's things that dancers would say that I wouldn't even repeat on here, even if it was an R-rated episode.
Right.
I wouldn't say it because it's just that gross, right?
Yeah.
And so I carried myself in a different way when I came into the industry. I'm not going to sit here and say that I was an angel through my whole career. That's ridiculous. But what I am kind of saying is, through all that mayhem, through all the stereotypical things that you would think of as a dancer, I tried my best to dress the right way, to carry myself with some class. And that stuff, even the way that I talk to women at ladies' nights or just clients in general, I was mentored by one of the best in the industry. And he literally laid the groundwork for me to be that instead of just the stereotypical dancer. And that got me to a different area. Like that took me to places that I never dreamed that I was going to get to in this industry. Right?
Yeah. So, well, and it's interesting because I'm hearing you talk, and what I'm hearing is that it really fed, whether it was healthy or unhealthy, and you kind of allude to that in the book, is it fed this sense of belonging to a degree. It was feeling like there's a little bit more clarity in your life. It's something that you were respected for, something that you could be admired for. And what's interesting is, I like you mentioned when you were talking about bodybuilding and your perfectionistic tendencies. I thought there was a really insightful thing that you said that I think a lot of women and men can relate to, but as a fitness nutrition instructor, this is interesting because I think this is especially true of men. Mm-hmm. You said that at that time, and you were referring to your bodybuilding years, at that time, my discipline came from obsession. It became a non-negotiable with no gray area whatsoever. I discovered that focusing on my exterior was the easy button to ignoring what was going on internally. And what I appreciate about that is this all or nothing mentality. And it is so prevalent. We live in a very all or nothing culture, and the cancel culture kind of comes into that too. It's like,
sure,
you know, one little thing that's a little dirty or messy, and it's like it negates every good thing that person's ever done or did. But what's interesting is I think this even plays into, strictly if we're just talking like fitness, nutrition, mindset, and I especially see it in my male clients. The women also struggle with all or nothing, right? Like eliminating entire food groups from their diet with getting rid of carbs, et cetera. But they're more willing to pursue a life of discipline, moderation. They are quicker to embrace it when taught with the right strategies. The men really struggle. And it's interesting to me that you said that, because I feel like that has been true of so many of the men that I've worked with, is they really struggle to come out of the all or nothing mentality. They're either 100% on board and they diet like crazy, they exercise like crazy, or they're out. And I was curious, like, what your thoughts are to that as a guy, somebody who is, well, you expressed it well.
Thanks.
What are your thoughts to that? Like, help us women understand the male mentality there, because I think you said it really well and it was insightful.
Hey, parents.
Yeah, you.
Are you looking for a podcast your kids will really love?
Well, we made one just for you.
And for us.
As genuine, all-natural kids ourselves, we know what makes a fun and interesting podcast.
So we decided to make it ourselves. Every show is packed with interviews, stories, and on-the-ground reporting.
We have interviewed everyone from scientists to Grammy Award-winning musicians to NFL quarterbacks.
Listen to Wild Interest wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, I think that there's an element of expectation on both sides of the gender equation with society. And so, like, as an example, I think that we, as men and women, we both have our certain amount of stresses, or for that matter, expectations by society that are a little bit, I don't know. I think we put a lot on ourselves to paint this picture on social media, or to paint this picture for other people, to have other people accept us instead of just accepting us for our true beauty within, right? And so, for me, it was kind of like, again, like I come back to this comparison game. When you're on the bodybuilding stage, right? What is that? That's a comparison. That's a comparison of the ultimate art form in my eyes at that time, of forming the clay of your own body into something that the best it can possibly be. Now, my genetics weren't necessarily going to get me to the Olympia, or for that matter, even my mentality towards maybe certain things that I needed to do to get there. I wasn't willing to go there because I wanted to live past 45, for example.
Right.
But I think that through that, that was the easy button for me, because although for a lot of people that would be really, really hard, discipline wasn't that hard for me. I enjoyed the process. I enjoyed the journey. I enjoyed the struggle. And even, believe it or not, when I would be doing squats and to failure, for example, I still enjoyed that process, because it actually like made me stronger and better. But I completely negated all the inner work because I was leaning so much on that exterior. So that exterior that I built in that gym, that was the reason why when I took my shirt off in that club, they said, yeah, let's do this. And that was the exact reason why when I got approached by my group that I ended up in Florida with, with those guys, it was partially due to the body that I had, but it was also partially due to the nice guy that I was. And as funny as this sounds, I was this big bouncer standing at the door with practically no neck. And the agent from there, he said to me when I very first met him, and this was long before I even went to work with his group, I'm talking when we first met, he said to me after the bar one night, he said, all the bar closed down, they were all still hanging out. He said, yeah, I really want to invite you to come down and work with my group, because you've got everything that it takes to be like a top-notch dancer with us. There's this one concern that I have. And I said, what's that, KC? He says, man, you're just way too nice of a guy to live in the States. I'm kind of worried about you. And I was just like, oh yeah, okay, sorry.
Not something you hear too often. Don't be so darn nice.
So I jokingly say sorry, but no, it's just kind of one of those things where, and so I guess like what I can say is by working on that exterior, yes, it did get me to being Mr. Nude Western Canada, second in Mr. Nude Canada. It got me to the point where I worked in the largest beach club in North America. It got me to travel all over the
US. Let's just pause for a second. Right? Mr. Nude Canada just sounds like an oxymoron because I just picture snow and freezing cold.
And shrinkage. And shrinkage.
So many things that just, I mean, yeah, I need a lot of clothes if I'm going to live in Canada. Let's just throw that out there. Yeah,
it's not that bad.
That's hilarious. One of the things that I think is just so consistent through, and what I love about the imagery, even figuratively, maybe not necessarily literally, but is this concept of attaching the idea of self-worth to one's external appearance, because it's so easy to just focus in here and literally just talk about like bodybuilding. But the fact is this struggle is so true for so many people, where with the advent of social media now and so many jobs where people are literally, I mean, I've kind of entered this now too. I mean, I spend the majority of my time in front of a camera.
Yeah.
And with social media influencers, that selfie culture now is very much, I think, infusing people with this sense of identity and self-worth. Yeah. And I think it's why we see so many fitness influencers, for example, with Botox and boob jobs and just not that I'm assigning a moral right or wrong to those things, but this concept that it's almost like you start to feel like you might become irrelevant and all of the beautiful things that you are doing will suddenly become irrelevant simply because you don't look as young.
Yeah, it's like keeping up with the Joneses thing, right? Like, but the Joneses have got even more harder to keep up now with this instant gratification era that we're in. And, you know, Simon
Sinek, and the filters. The filters. Yeah. I mean, even right now on Zoom, I am actually, I don't even have the touch-up appearance on, but it naturally adds it.
Yeah.
Because we've become so self-conscious of how we are appearing. And so what I love about your entire story, and I think everything that you say, is it constantly comes back to this sort of self-realization that there's this very fine line, like you mentioned with bodybuilding, between discipline bordering on obsession versus a healthy sense of, I don't do this to infuse myself with worth. I do this because I am already worth it.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to live out of that worth.
Yeah.
And I love that you just express that very well throughout your book. Tell me a little bit about the mentality. One thing that you talk about is how you felt like what you were doing was starting to chip away at that self-worth.
Yeah.
Talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, first off, there's a big difference between status and worth. And I got those two things confused for a long time, right? Because all I was trying to do is get up that mountain. All I was trying to do was get to the point where I was accepted, or for that matter, I could get to the point of having this title or working in this environment. And that, yes, I did have a lot of things drop in my lap, so to speak, with that. But I kind of feel that it took me till this age actually to figure out what my real worth was. Mm-hmm. All those years that I was on stage and hiding behind the mask of my alter ego, yeah, those were fun. It gave me acceptance. Like, that is literally the reason why I put my chain, like my pendant from my chain that's around my neck, that's covering my face on my book, because that was an element of acceptance. There was a point when that chain was given to me by someone in Florida that was close to me that accepted me just like the guys that we had replaced from the year before. And those guys were the best in the industry. So when she gave me that chain, that was one of 11 that were ever made. The other 10 guys were the ones that actually had the other ones. So when she gave me that, it was like, I mean, I almost broke down in tears because it was such a form of acceptance. And so it was almost like I hit that peak there, but I didn't really truly accept myself still. And this is crazy as it sounds. Everybody else accepted me. Like, everybody wanted a piece of me, like just to get in the club or to be associated with the VIPs or to be in front of all the people at MTV or whatever reason. There was always some other reason, but it was never really about me. Like, it was never about being my true friend. There was only a few people that were my true friends. So there was times, honestly, Anna, where I would even leave the club sometimes when it was packed and everybody would be wanting just to get in there. I leave and go and hang out with my old buddy that was a Vietnam vet on a Friday night and sit there and just hang out, watch TV with him, because I just wanted to be accepted for the person that I really was.
Right? Be with somebody that you could be real with.
Yeah, just being honest, right? And so it's sort of like, it's weird because I never pictured myself on a billboard, right? Like I never even saw myself in that frame. That didn't even occur to me in my entire life. Like I never thought that I would ever even be a dancer or any of those things. Like, in fact, a nightmare of exposure for me when I was a kid. So I went right into my biggest fears and pursued it and did it. And I guess I could say, like, for somebody that did the industry, I don't really know anybody that's been in the industry as long as I have been in the male arena. Yeah. And when it came down to it, especially working on both sides of the border, with those things, it came a lot of really pivotal moments, some really incredible experiences, some horrible experiences, but that's life, right? Yeah. And so, yes, it's projected through my lens and it's entertaining. Like there's entertaining stuff in there for sure, but there's a point behind every single chapter in my book. And it really breaks down to, I took 10 extra years after I actually retired from the industry, almost 10 years to write this. It wasn't because I couldn't have wrote it when I got out. I could have wrote about all the stories and entertained everybody, and that would have been great, but it would have been hollow.
Yeah.
And so where I was at is when I started writing, I went, okay, like this story is compromising this value that I have, and what emotional struggle did I have with that value? Okay. So for example, the first chapter is my value's truth, my struggle's perspective of my truth. Mm-hmm. And at the end of every chapter, I throw in the naked truth. Now, that is actually from my unhazed, undrug addicted, unsexually addicted, all the stuff that I went through before. I'm out of that now. So I'm on the other side of it, looking in and going, hey, I'm accountable now.
Right.
I'm not pushing blame game on anybody anymore. I'm using the thumb instead of the finger all the time. And now I'm actually able to liberate myself and come back in here and go, yeah, man, like this is relatable to you. That 30-year-old guy is dealing with lack. He's dealing with self-doubt. All the things that a lot of guys deal with, like they may not want to admit it, but they do. And that's the reason why we have a lot of suicide, especially with men.
Yep.
And so as you were saying, there's that element of like expectation to live up to something, and whether it's social media, or maybe it's just living up to what your wife's expectations are of you, or maybe you're, you know, COVID kicked in and you're not making the money you had before and you've got two kids and you don't even know how you're going to feed them because you're out of work or whatever reason. Mm. All those things, those layers start to just add on and add on.
Yeah.
And then they get so heavy. Sometimes a lot of people take the wrong route. And I was right there. I was right there. Like, I swear, like I've walked that walk. And when I lost everything and I ended up back here in Canada, like I was sitting here and I just did a video about it from the exact spot yesterday where, well, it was 15 years ago.
Mm.
And I wasn't a dancer anymore. Well, I was, but I was just kind of, wasn't the same. I wasn't in that same realm anymore. Mm-hmm. I was out of Florida and divorced. I'd gone through all this hell.
Yeah.
And I had nothing left. And I was at that point where it was just destruction or progression.
Who am I? Yeah.
And so I moved into progression, but I still didn't actually at that time work on my inner self.
Yeah.
And so I was still doing that. Oh, I'm going to just build my exterior back to get acceptance. And I still hadn't figured that out. Right. And when I figured that out, when I truly figured that out, that's when I put the pen to paper, because then it was like, okay, now I can talk to that guy, be real to that guy, be relatable to that guy. I don't care if that guy's a garbage truck driver. I'm going to give that guy the best that I got to prevent him from going through all that, pardon my French, shit that I went through. Right.
It's not just stories anymore. It's life lessons. It's absolutely. Okay. Now we're on the other side. Let's bring this to a point, which I think you do really well. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to play a speed round of this or that with Corey and have a little fun.
Oh,
and we're going to hear more of his expert advice on discovering self-worth right when we come back.
You have tried it all. Worried you will never lose the extra weight or reclaim the energy you once enjoyed? Want to achieve fat loss without spending hours in a gym or eliminating entire food groups from your diet? Well, now you can. In the virtual Faster Way to Fat Loss with Anna, my 6-week fitness and nutrition program, you will learn how to pair effective 30-minute workouts with all natural, evidence-based nutritional strategies to leverage what you eat and when you eat to reset your metabolism and burn fat fast, even that stubborn belly fat. I am a dual certified nurse practitioner passionate about teaching sustainable strategies to promote fat loss and prevent disease. I have cheered on thousands of clients who have done just that with the Faster Way program. In my 6-week program, the average client currently sheds 7 inches of body fat. 93% report more energy and 89% state that their mental health has improved. 100% of clients report they feel this program is sustainable. Curious to try the program but not sure if the strategies will work for you? Try the Faster Way strategies for free. Head to www.hammersandhugs.com and sign up for my free 7-day fat loss accelerator course today and start your own transformation story.
All right, we are back with Corey. We're going to play a quick round of this or that. Corey, it's very easy. You basically get two options. You pick one or the other. It's not too stressful. All right, candy or baked goods?
Ooh, that's a toughie.
I know.
Can we be more specific? No, I'm going to go candy.
Okay, what's your favorite candy?
Ooh, man. It's definitely just chocolate. Chocolate in general. Just
dark?
Dark. All the way.
Yeah. Dark or milk, chocolate. I guess it's called. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Squats or pull-ups?
Ooh. Because it's my weak point, I'm going squats. I'm going squats on that. Because that's my, I always go to the weak one.
Yeah. Good for you. Okay. Would you rather pull-ups or push-ups?
Again, I do push-ups better than pull-ups, so I will go with pull-ups.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't like either of them.
I have a story about pull-ups in my book, though, actually, that I got my sweatpants yarded down while I was doing pull-ups in the middle of my gym. So, yeah.
Well, now I really don't like pull-ups. I'm never doing a pull-up again. I blame it on Corey. Okay. Would you rather be a ninja or a pirate?
Oh, I'd be rather be a ninja for sure. Yeah.
Would you rather have a personal yacht or a jet?
Love the water, but it takes a lot longer to get there. I think based on my career where it's going, I think I'm going to need the jet.
The jet. And where are you going? Where's the first place you're going on your jet?
I would actually, if I was going to go, I would go back to Asia because I ended up. Okay. Yeah. The reason why I would go to Indonesia, because before COVID, I ended up having my trip cut short. I was there and I was one of the last people out of Bali, actually. Mm. And I got back just 12 hours before the borders shut down. So I was supposed to go to a yoga retreat for a couple weeks in Gili Islands. I wasn't able to do it. So yeah, I'd go finish my trip. Definitely.
Just go back to Indonesia. Yeah. I've heard amazing. There's so many, oh my gosh, so many places to discover in Asia.
Absolutely.
Well, anywhere really. Okay. Beef or chicken?
Oh, chicken all the way. Yeah, definitely chicken.
Early bird or night owl?
Ooh, trying to be an early bird, but admittedly still a night owl.
I hear that. The early bird thing is not natural for all of us. I've had to force myself. Talk about discipline. That's been my greatest goal in life that I've actually achieved is becoming an early bird.
Oh, it's a toughie.
It's so hard.
I feel like at night I'm missing out on something if I go to bed weirdly enough. I always kind of feel that way.
I think you're normal. I'm even less normal. I just like sleeping. I just like sleeping. I love my bed. I get up early in the morning and I look back longingly at it. I'm like, oh, you look so good. I will stay out of bed.
I always say it. Cool is the other side of the pillow. For sure.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I've gotten it though. I've gotten it slowly but surely. I have my early morning routine down. All right. Last one.
Sure.
Cardio or weights?
Oh man. Especially now, cardio without a doubt.
You're probably burnt out. Are you burnt out with weights?
No, I haven't actually touched a weight in a while. Yeah. I've really devoted my life to yoga and I need to kind of just start to do a little bit of weight training again because I'm kind of finding that yoga is amazing, but I'm trying to undo a lot of the damage that I did as a
bodybuilder. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
So, yeah, but the cardio thing, I've always been high on the cardio thing. I always try my best to do it, but yoga gives me a little bit of both. So
it's a healthy balance. It really is. It's interesting talking to people. I mean, I just feel like generally speaking, the body needs a little bit of all of it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. In order to truly function optimally, but it's hard when you've been so extreme on one end, it's hard to healthily bring that back in.
Girl, I didn't even stretch for the entire time I was a bodybuilder. My hamstrings were still screaming.
You're kidding. Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Like,
you're lucky you didn't end up with like avulsion fractures and stuff. You know, where it like pulls stuff off the bone.
Oh yeah. I had guys in my gym that did ripped hamstrings and all that. Yeah, yeah. But I mean, going from that into being a dancer and then at one point being a ceramic tile and stonemason. Yeah. Like, I was on my knees doing ceramic tile and stone for a few years, running my own company doing that. And so like all that damage, oh my goodness. Like that's another whole thing about taking off layers is the yoga thing is taking off layers spiritually, mentally, physically, all that. That's why I'm such a junkie with yoga now. I'm so into it, right? It brought me that balance and peace. That's part of why I was able to write was just laying in Shavasana, sitting there, going, okay, like that's a great idea. Let's note that.
You just know? Learning the art of being still.
It's tough. That's hard.
Yeah. That is hard, very hard.
Yeah.
It is very hard. So you mentioned that you also struggled with substance abuse.
Yeah, I did.
What's so interesting is just from a psychological, my husband and I have talked about this actually, is just how certain personalities are almost addictive by nature. Mm-hmm. It's like even if all of XYZ lined up mm-hmm. really, really well, that some people just have the tendency. And I think it tends to often be people too who are really passionate. Like mm-hmm. you feel deeply, you feel, but especially if you didn't have that outlet to express mm-hmm. and to feel that emotion, you find it in other ways.
Yeah.
And tell me a little bit about your experience with substance abuse, the emotional and physical mindset there.
When you talk about something that gives you the goosebumps, it's just like, whether it's just somebody you love or if it's something that you've done that gives you the goosebumps or whatever it was. Like I actually, even though I did this entertainer career and stuff, it was rare that I got the goosebumps. I didn't really feel like I felt, but I wasn't really expressing my true emotional capacity because it was almost like there was a block there all the time. So I was very, again, unique in this way that when I was in high school, like I wasn't the kid out back smoking a joint with the friends while I was going to school. I wasn't that kid. I was the kid that might grab a six pack on the weekend and go out to a party and party with. That was like, oh,
yeah.
Right. So I didn't do any of that stuff in my entire time till I was 26 years old here in Canada. I'd never touched a drug in my life outside of just a beer or maybe a drink sometime. Right. Like I was very clean. In fact, the only other drug that I could say that I did was steroids when I was a bodybuilder. And that was for the purpose of trying to become pro, which when I gave up on that dream, I kind of gave up on the steroids too, that were just a supplement. I admittedly did that for a reason. Now, was it right? No, I don't condone going out and doing that. Sure. I don't think anybody needs to do that. And it's just like my substance abuse stuff that came after I was 26. I'm not here to promote to your audience that it's a good thing to go and drop an ecstasy tab down your throat.
Right.
That's not what I'm here to say.
But as an emergency medicine professional, I agree with that statement.
It's not recommended, but it did really truthfully open up a very interesting door for me personally, because when you're disconnected emotionally, like I was, it's almost like when, and I've said this before, it's like, imagine eating food for all your life and you don't really get the taste of it. You're just consuming it and it gives you the energy that you need, but you're not really tasting it. And then all of a sudden one day, you taste something like a nice dark chocolate. It's just like, boom. And so for me, I went to Florida. I had been invited down there after basically, as I mentioned, that agent that I'd spoken to years before that said I was too nice of a guy. I actually put his card in my pocket, didn't use it until I actually did the Mr. Nude Canada contest and hit my peak here. And then all of a sudden he said, hey, or I called him up and I said, hey, I'm interested in working with your group 5 years later. And he remembered me and said, yeah, come on down. So I jumped on the tour van with those guys when they came up here to Canada. They did a 3-week tour. I went with them. And then I jumped in the tour van, left my family, my friends, left everything behind. Like my entire life, gone, right? Clean slate. I go to Florida. I walk into this environment that's MTV, that's 8,000 people inside this nightclub. I've never even seen a nightclub this big before. I walk in and I'm getting introduced to the heaviest hitters around there, the owners, the entertainment coordinators, and everybody's having a good time. And they're just, it's love, peace, no fighting. Mm-hmm. Everybody's just ripping it up, having a great time. This is the heyday of the electronica movement. It's 1996. I mean, I'm painting a picture for you that it's like so crazy in this place some nights that it was raining inside the nightclub from the humidity inside the nightclub. There was so many people. Like it was just absolute insanity on another level. New world, totally new world.
Yeah.
So what do? I see what everybody else is doing. I'm now in this other environment. My plant moved into this crazy environment. So now I'm seeing what other people are doing. And my friend Damon, I'll never forget it. He turned around, he says to me, he goes like with his Alabama accent, hey, Corey.
Yeah.
I've never taken anything in my life either, but if you want to take this here pill, ecstasy pill, it'll be the most biggest blast you'll ever have. And I'm like, oh yeah, what's that going to do? Pop. And next thing you know, 45 minutes later, this rush, these goosebumps hit me from head to toe. The taste hits me. The feeling of emotion hits me like I've never felt before, ever. Mm. Like I've never even had that. So mentally addictive. Oh my God. And so all of a sudden, these people that I'm actually trying to gain acceptance around are all accepting me and vice versa. Now I'm having deep, intimate conversations with people that I've never had before in the middle of the mayhem. I'm turning into the popular guy, the one that everybody wants to hang out with, right? And I went from being mediocre in my eyes, into instant popularity. And then all these other things start hitting me, and it starts expanding wider and wider and wider to the point where I'm literally living the dream, and I'm doing crazy stuff that when normal people in this world were sitting there doing their job from the 9 to 5, I'm running around on some beach at 8 o'clock in the morning, still ripping it up with my friends being stupid. Right. And it was just this absolutely free bird, crazy lifestyle that I took full advantage of. And why did I do that? Because I was sitting there going, man, life, like we all do what we need to do. But for me, I was at that time just going, I'm going to live this to the freaking max. I'm going to juice every single bit out of it. So yes, it was bad. Okay. It was bad. I'm not going to sit here and say that it was good for me, but if I didn't do that, I wouldn't have been able to unlock the emotions that I was able to unlock. And I still, though, had such inconsistencies with my marriage, with my relationships, even though I had the chemical thing going on with that. I still couldn't face my own internal struggles as far as what happened earlier in my life. I could never, and it's not like they were big T's. Those traumas were not big T's on it. They were small traumas, but they still stuck, like words from somebody that you love sitting there saying you're a follower, you're not a leader, Corey. Like stuff like that, right? Like what did I do? I ended up following. I didn't lead. I led my own path, but I couldn't lead others. Right?
Yeah.
And so I didn't do that because I heard those words embedded. So like that whole new world changed me as a person in a lot of ways, in a really good way. But then I went through a lot of downward spiral struggles as well. But and that comes with that territory. Like entertainment is just kind of like that. Like we feed that. So that addiction was more mental than it was physical.
Right.
Because I really loved being in that mindset. Yeah. Like when my ex-wife would turn around and say to me, Corey, oh my God, I wish you could be like this forever. While I was ripped out of my mind, she would be sitting there saying, I wish you were like this when you were sober. That told me in its own right.
Right. You need to keep.
And so it was almost like that motivation to keep up with the Joneses. Like, and we got paid, we were paid to party. So as crazy as that sounds, like even just laying out on a pool deck, attracting women to come into the ladies' night that night, you had to keep on a certain level. If you were working out, you had to keep it a certain level. When you're on the stage, you have to keep it a certain level. When you're out ripping it up in the club till 4 o'clock in the morning, you have to keep it that level. And there's a high expectation there. And then it's kind of like you're not living your authentic life. And so
right, because you're just constantly trying to meet everyone else's expectation of, and you know what, though, that's where I feel like I hear that. But I think there are a lot of people that can relate to that sense of, maybe it's not ecstasy, but there's so many other things that could be drugs in our life that we are basically using to try to meet other people's expectations of who we should be or what we should accomplish. And I think with substance abuse too, and I've seen this certainly many times as a professional in the ER, is that it often tends to be one of two things. It's people either taking it to become more of something or less of something, meaning they want to feel more or they want to feel less. And I agree with you. And I think for people who don't have any experience with substance abuse or people who have experienced substance abuse, I think it's a very enlightening understanding that I would argue more often than not, it does almost become more of a mental or emotional addiction as much as a physical one. It usually starts with a mental or an emotional.
It's a void. There was a void there. Like it was like, for me, it was like a literally in 1 second, Donna, it went from like literally 1 second. It was like, as soon as that hit me, the emotional void filled.
Yeah.
It was completely filled. So like I couldn't help but get addicted to it. It was just there, right?
Yeah.
And the weird thing is I was even talking to a police officer here locally when I went hiking with my boxer dog a while back. And we were chatting about, because at that time, actually marijuana was at the point of being legalized here in Canada. And so there was a bit of a debate about it. And since then, it's like a barren wasteland here since marijuana has been legalized and everything's horrible and the bomb dropped. No, that's not what happened. Everything is exactly the same. There's no change whatsoever, actually.
Yeah.
But at the time, like she was saying to me, oh, you know, yeah, it's a gateway drug. And I was like, yeah, it is a gateway drug. And she was thinking one thing and I was on the other end of the scale.
Yeah.
And so for me, when I got
back. And both perspectives are right. I would argue that both are actually right. You're coming from two very different viewpoints, but
Yeah, they were both
not
right.
Wrong. Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
So my only way of easing my mind when I got back to Canada, actually, to get away from it, that was my gateway out.
Yeah.
That was literally my gateway out. And do I do that all the time? No. There's an element of responsibility that comes with all these things, right? But at the same time, it's kind of like, yeah, that did help me. And as crazy as
you're saying that marijuana helped you get off of
ecstasy,
other substances, right?
Because the only other one I did was ecstasy. It was an upper, right? So you're taking an upper that you want to keep up, right?
Yeah.
Well, if you're not up, then you're jonesing to be up. And so marijuana eased my mind. It was like, okay, I can eat this brownie or I can do this.
Right.
And all of a sudden, the worst thing that I want to do is lay around on my couch and not do anything. And that's detrimental in its own right, but nowhere near as detrimental as doing all the other stuff I was doing.
Yeah.
And that also helped me to actually balance my life out a little bit, believe it or not. So again, like, I'm not here to promote it on, I'm not here to tell your audience to do these things, but this is what helped me. This is my perspective, what got me out of it, right?
Yeah. Well, and again, it's a real life story. I think that's the takeaway is I think the beauty of a platform like this, and I think you communicate very well and authentically and respectfully, but it's this idea that nobody's story matters more or less than somebody else's, right? Like, we all have messy stories. Some just might be a little bit more explicit than others, but at the end of the day, we're all a mess. And I think that's the beauty of it, is we all need to understand our value and who we are. It's just the story getting there may look very different.
Admittedly, I say this still, like, do you think that I don't deal with mental health issues this day? Like, I do. Everybody does to a certain degree. Some are worse than others, but I don't have all the answers, right? But what I can tell you, just being authentic and honest, is I've learned that when the saboteur gets in my head, when the saboteur of self-doubt, of lack, all the things that have been embedded, it gets in my head still. There's not every day that I wake up and I feel like I'm on top of the world. There's days when I wake up and I want to go back to bed. But there's still, when that saboteur creeps in, now I know how to flick that switch, just like the switch that I flicked when I would walk on stage. Like, when the butterflies were hitting and I was freaked out and worried about whether or not I was going to be able to perform, I had to flick a switch and just go do it because there was no other option. Now I look at it just like that with my saboteur in my head. I have to flick the switch because there's no other option. And it takes me to get out into nature to reset, to be able to do whatever I need to get my head back right before I sit back in front of the computer or do whatever I need to do. You got to do it because that will embed and stay there. And then all of a sudden, all that stuff that you're telling yourself, all those can'ts that you're telling yourself start to actually become real. And they're not. They're just not. And that's what I come back to with that normalization. If I'm going to listen to what other people that paint one picture of me and they only, that it's their own inconsistencies that they're actually presenting to me, or their own lack that they're throwing on top of me, which happens a lot.
Yeah, their own insecurities being projected onto
I could sit here and take all that weight of those layers and hold it all day long and have a crap day. Or I can just go, okay, that's them. And that's what I'm referring to as far as my biological, or I should say my grandmother, when she turned around and said to me, you're a follower, not a leader. Okay. Mm-hmm. Like, I had to actually realize in my own way, I had to figure out that, okay, Corey, when was an example when your grandfather and your grandmother were leaders in your life, honestly? And when I did that, I could find certain things about leadership with my grandfather that when it came to work, but at the home, like at house, like, it wasn't there so much. And when it came to my grandmother, she settled for a lot of things and didn't lead in a lot of ways herself. So what was she really saying when she was saying, you're a follower, not a leader? She wasn't talking to me. She was talking to herself. She was projecting that off on me. And so, like, I say this to people that I associate with now that are authors, that are trying to go into public speaking or whatever it may be. I always say, whatever you do, don't let people that were in your past that have painted their own picture of you of normalization hold you back. Because there's a lot of other people out in this world that see your gold. They see your potential. They see the best version of you. Go put yourself uncomfortably in front of those people. Be bold. Take action, uncomfortable action. Nobody's going to do it for you. Go bloody well do it yourself.
It's humbling as a parent too, because, you know, you mentioned that about your grandma, and I think it's so easy for us to do as, I just think as a parent, there are certain strengths that I have, there's certain weaknesses that I have, and my children may not inherently struggle with the same things. So I think your point is really, really well made, that we have to be so careful ourselves to not be projecting our own strengths or weaknesses onto our kids, but to be able to flex and see their own little struggles that God's kind of innately given them.
True.
I think that's manuals. If only. Oh, I need a manual for my son. He's the one I really need a manual for.
No, but that's the beauty of it, though. In a weird way, that is the beauty of it, though. Like, I mean, I have people in my life that are close to me and people in my life from afar that I admire, you know, and that I've never met before that I admire, and some that I don't necessarily agree with, but I respect their perspective in a lot of ways. And I look up to people, like, as an example, like Russell Wilson from the Seahawks. Like, he was a very underrated, like, quarterback that ended up, he's going to be a future Hall of Famer. And the way he presents himself is, like, admirable, right? And it's sort of like, to me, I'm not mirroring what he's doing, but I can take a lot of those things and understand why he got to where he got to. His dad was the guy that said every day while he walked out the door, be great today, be great today. Mm-hmm. Embedded that into his kid's head instead of you're a follower, not a leader.
Right?
Like, and so that inspires me. Yeah. And it's kind of funny. I'm not a parent. Okay. Like, I don't have kids. I'm a single guy with a boxer dog. But sometimes, oddly enough, I kind of think to myself sometimes, a lot of those people that decided not to be parents probably would have been really, probably taught not to parents. Mm. Like, I really kind of think that. Like, they had this element of their own responsibility that they were like, you know, I don't really need to have kids right now because I need to get my shit together. And it's kind of like when I was talking about my book, like, I didn't want to release my baby to the world until I got my shit together to make sure that that baby looked good. And you can tell me my baby's ugly now and I don't care.
I mean, even though you don't have kids, you're still making a massive impact because people will be reading this book. And I think there is more to being a parent than just a biological connection. Sure. So I think there's many people out there who don't have kids, but they are still fulfilling leadership roles in many, many people's lives.
And my biological mom too, like, I give her all the credit in the world because, like, for her, she was in my life, but wasn't in my life a lot of the time, but she was there for my grandparents when they were passing away. She was the one that was the caregiver. And so she made massive sacrifices to be able to take care of her folks. Right. Yeah. And so, like, I look up to her a lot for all of her faults and all of her imperfections. Mm. She's so imperfectly perfect. Mm. And so, like any parent, they frustrate you at times with maybe not believing in certain things or whatever it might be. Yeah. But I got to really look at the positive with her and go, man, you know, you really did a lot that it really helped me out in a lot of ways. As many struggles I went through with her too, there's a side of it where I can really truly appreciate her perspective on where she was, because if it wasn't for her, my life wouldn't be the same either. Right. So I got to look at the positive. Like, you can't, there's too many problems in the world for me to be focusing on problems now. That's a waste of energy. Like, I'm just like, let's provide solutions. Like, no matter what, just look for the solution. And one thing I will say that I think that really is happening in this era right now is black or white. You're right. Yeah. I'm wrong. I'm right. You're wrong. All that BS. And to me, I'm just kind of at that point where I'm trying to spread the love and just kind of get to the point where it's like, there's a gray area here. Mm-hmm. Let's just talk about it. I may disagree with you, but let me just get into your head a little bit. Like, you may not change my mind. I may not change yours, but just give me an idea of what's ticking in there so I can kind of understand you a little bit. It's okay to not agree. It's okay to not, you know.
Yeah. And it's the concept of relationship and being able to hear people's stories and hear their perspectives and have a better understanding of what somebody has gone through and how it might frame the decisions that they made or the things that they've said. Sure. And we've definitely lost art. It's sad to even say that relationship is an art, but nowadays
it
definitely is. To have real conversation is, it's an art. And our children are going to struggle with it, with this virtual world. Yeah.
And plus, there's this definition, I come back to this in the book too, there's this definition of man enough that keeps getting thrown around. And it's kind of like, to me, like, I watched my father, who, again, like I said, I adored this man. But at the same time, like, he bottled up his emotions. He was military. He was really framed to be that way. Like, when it came down to it, it was like a robot thing, right? And based off of his former life, as far as his upbringing went, he had a really hard upbringing, more so than most people would. So can you really blame the man for not being emotionally connected? Not really, because he was basically built like that. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, it's kind of like when you bottle up all those emotions, and guess what ends up happening? You don't say anything. And then all of a sudden, eventually something triggers you and you say all the wrong things and it blurts out and it's very hurtful, right? So something that I mentioned in the book that I created this little tagline myself, but it's the truth is You don't have to be the one that doesn't cry. Like, you don't have to be the hunter-gatherer, like the caveman mm-hmm. mentality of being a man. Like, let the dam break before you dam break.
Right.
You know, like, just right. let it happen. Because, I mean, I learned that when it came down to my relationships, I would have breakups and I would be so emotionally distraught. And I'd take it yeah. so hard, like way harder than most people would take it, and just bury myself into this whole self-pity, freaking victimized mindset.
Yeah. Yeah.
And other people wouldn't really see it that way. And I thought, am I just like emotionally like shot or something? Like, yeah. what's wrong with me? But it was because I was bottling it all up.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden I just didn't know how to handle it or even how to absorb it.
Yeah. Right?
But if I was actually like not bottling it up and kind of like expressing myself more and connecting with my partner instead of just communicating with her,
right,
then I probably right. would have had a lot better path and a lot less destruction in my life.
Yeah. Right?
But it's good to be here now.
Yeah. Well, and so, you know, I think again, in consistent theme throughout your book is this idea that I've certainly experienced this in my own life, but it's this concept of, why am I enough? Like, what makes me valuable? What makes me mm-hmm. worthy? And for me personally, in my own life, I could not come to that true sense of peace and worth until I met Jesus. For me, it was a personal mm-hmm. relationship with Jesus Christ. And mm-hmm. when I embraced this truth that I preach all the time now, it's my heartbeat, it's that mm-hmm. you cannot be redefined. You can only be redeveloped. Mm-hmm. And it's because I came to understand that we were infused with infinite worth mm-hmm. by a divine creator from the moment I was knit together in my mother's womb. Not just mm-hmm. me, but you and yeah. our neighbor and the guy that I totally disagree with and the woman yeah. who, frankly, I have a hard time being in the same room with. Like, the fact is, it puts us all on the same playing field and we are all valuable. Like, absolutely. We've already been defined. We can only be redeveloped. Yeah. And I think that you mentioned at the end of your book, or at least the section that I was reading, it says, there is more to life than what I was programmed to think. Value is not determined by what I have, but instead by what is in my soul. Mm-hmm. And I love that. I want to end with that because mm-hmm. I think it just speaks exactly into what I am so passionate about, that you cannot be redefined, only redeveloped. You're infinitely valuable before and mm-hmm. after, as you were. And as you are now, infinitely valuable.
I don't speak through religious or political ideology at all, but I relate to everything that you just said. Mm. And when it comes right down to it, the learning lesson that I had through this whole process was that that one person that I adored and I looked up to for so long that actually looked down at me from her pedestal, that affected me.
Mm.
And that made me just Corey. And what I'm saying by that is just like you're low level, right? When I got married and the mistake I made of having this Ricky and Lucy relationship in the year 2000 and trying to look at myself as this man that goes and gets food, works, does what he does to bring home the pay, all that good stuff. And I want my wife at home being the traditional housewife, just like my grandparents, right? I tried to play that BS role. And what it came down to, what was I doing? I was standing up on my pedestal, looking down at my ex-wife, controlling her, almost to the point of being borderline misogynistic, controlling her at times. Why? Because she wanted that control. And I took her out of a horrible environment and I brought her into my new world that was a lot more fun. And guess what? She owed me for that. She owed me for that. How dare she actually not want to be with me? I'm perfect. Come on.
Yeah, really? We flipped the switch so fast.
Right? So now when you're talking, what I was referring to is, though, is that now when I'm in a relationship with somebody and I'm not there yet, but I'm bringing these people into my life, I've manifested these people into my life, the type of people that I'm not looking up or down at, I'm looking them straight in the eye, those windows to the soul, I'm looking straight into that. And that feels amazing because guess what that's going to do? That's going to bring me to that higher level of consciousness that I've always strived for. Those goosebumps when I look into those eyes, that feeling when I look at that person laying next to me and I'm sitting there going, for all of her imperfections, oh my God, like that's a beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. And so,
it's a beautiful sense of humility. There's freedom in the humility of recognizing that we are simply, we're really all the same. We've been
perfectly perfect.
That's right. And we've been created by a divine creator, and our worth was infused by him, not by anything I do. You can't add to or detract from your worth. That's we right. are infinitely valuable because of how we've been created. Well, Corey, so I thank you so much for this. If people want to find you or follow you, where do they need to go? What website or what email?
You know, I always just direct people to my website right now. I'm trying to boost my SEO. I'm not going to deny it.
I'm so real.
Like, I'm just like, you know what? I'm just going to tell it just like it is.
Absolutely. We'll make sure it's on the show notes. Yes, you bet.
So my website is takeitoff.ca. Simply takeitoff.ca. And the great thing is that you can actually, of course, purchase my book. I'm going to be having some package deals on there for certain things. In fact, I'm expanding things a lot right now. Yeah. I'm trying to figure out my next road, the one that actually for me really gives me the goosebumps. And for me, it's just more so I'm going to be going into podcasting as well.
Yeah.
And obviously, if a person's a podcaster wants to book me as a guest, you can book me on there for that. If you want to check out my gallery and see some skin from 20 years ago, you can check that out as well. If you want to just check out my bio and all the stuff that basically I represent, feel free to. But that's the place really is takeitoff.ca is the main one. And check it out. Everybody's going to say they wrote the best book ever, but I will say this, it's not the best book ever, but it really is something that I truly put my heart and soul into. I gave it everything that I could, and I'll leave it with this. If I can help one, and I know everybody says it, but if I can help just one person to not deal with the pain, the struggle, the prison that I was in my own mind. If I can release that person from that prison, then everything worked out. Doesn't matter if I just sold one book. Everything worked out.
I have no doubt you will affect more than just one person in that way, Corey. Well, it's been an honor. Yep. I pray God's blessing over your life and all that you're doing.
Same to you.
Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast. It is my honor to be here with you. I am so grateful for each and every one of you. If you are watching on YouTube, be sure to click the subscribe button below so you don't miss a show, and leave a comment with your thoughts from today's episode below. If you are listening via your preferred podcasting platform, would you help keep us on the air by rating our show and leaving an honest review of your thoughts from today? In case you haven't heard it lately, your story matters and you are loved. This is your host, Anna Fulmer, and I will see you here next time on the Imperfectly Empowered Podcast.